Here's a question I want you to sit with. When you go out to do pattern work, how many go-arounds do you actually practice? Not the ones where your instructor calls it, not the ones where there's a plane on the runway and you have to break off. I mean the ones where you're in the flare, you've committed to landing, and then you, on your own initiative because the situation calls for it, decide to go around. For most student pilots, the honest answer is, not nearly enough. I'm pattern, and this is traffic pattern on radio hangar. Today we're talking about the go-around. The decision, the procedure, the common mistakes that show up on check ride score sheets and in accident narratives, and how to make this one of the most automatic things you do in the traffic pattern. Before we get into it, quick word for our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every milestone in your training. First solo private pilot certificate instrument rating, commercial, a really solid way to mark the moments that actually mean something. aviationsoul.com. All right, let's get into it. The National Transportation Safety Board tracks a cognitive pattern that shows up in general aviation accidents more often than most people realize. It's called plan continuation bias. The tendency to keep doing what you were already doing even when the evidence is telling you to stop. You see it in weather-related accidents. A pilot watches the weather deteriorate, knows the destination is probably below minimums, but keeps going because they've already come this far. And you see it in landing accidents. The approach isn't right. Airspeed is off. A gust pushed the nose sideways. The glide path is wrong. But the runway is right there. The gear is down. The flaps are out. You've been flying this approach for the last 2 minutes, and something in your brain says, I can make this work. That instinct is wrong, and it has contributed to a lot of runway overruns, hard landings, and accident reports sitting in the NTSB database. Here's something I wish someone had told me when I was training. A go-around is not a failed landing. A go-around is a professional decision. It's the aeronautical equivalent of looking at a situation and saying, this doesn't meet my standard, so I'm going to set up and try again. The pilots who execute go-arounds quickly and cleanly are not the pilots who couldn't land. They're the pilots who hold a higher standard for what acceptable looks like. So let's start with the decision itself. When do you go around? The stabilized approach concept gives you a framework, and most instructors teach some version of it. By 500 feet above ground level on a visual approach, you want to be on speed, on centerline, on glide path, and in your final landing configuration. All of those things, if any one of them isn't right at 500 feet, you go around. Not, let me see what the picture looks like closer in. You go around at 500 feet. Real flying doesn't always hand you clean decisions at 500 feet. Gusts happen. Traffic appears on the runway when you're on short final, so go-arounds happen at all altitudes, including very low ones. Which means the procedure has to be practiced enough that you can execute it without thinking through each step. And here's the piece that often gets skipped in training. The decision has to happen before the approach. Before you even turn final, you should have a personal standard set. If the picture isn't right at 500 feet, I'm going around. Say it out loud. Commit to it. Because when you're at 200 feet, a little fast, a little left of centerline, and your brain is doing the math on whether you can salvage this, that is not the moment to develop a go-around policy. You develop that policy on the ground, the airman certification standards for the private pilot practical test, and your examiner will be evaluating against these. Say you should be able to initiate a go-around from any point in the approach and landing sequence. That includes the flare, that includes after the wheels have touched down if the situation requires it. Not go around when things look really bad. Any point, that's a demanding standard and it's the right one. Let's walk through the 5 common mistakes. I want to spend real time here because this is where check ride failures happen and this is where accidents happen. Mistake number 1, delayed power application. When you decide to go around, power comes first, not the radio call, not the flaps, not the trim, power, full throttle. Immediately, on short final, or in the flare, you're in a nose-high, low-power, low-airspeed configuration. High drag, minimal thrust, the airplane is in an energy-depleted state. If you do anything before adding power, anything at all, you're extending the time you spend in that state. At low altitude, the margin between climbing and settling is extremely thin. Power, first, always, without exception. Mistake number 2. Flap retraction sequencing. Here's what I see on check rides. Student goes around, adds power, good start, then immediately yanks the flaps all the way up, and the airplane sinks, sometimes significantly. At full flaps, your airplane is generating a lot of drag, but it's also producing lift at a lower airspeed than it would with flaps retracted. When you pull those flaps up all at once, you lose the drag, but you also lose that low-speed lift. If your airspeed hasn't built yet, you're going to lose altitude quickly. At 100 feet, there's nowhere for that altitude to go. The correct sequence, check your pilot's operating handbook because this varies by aircraft, is add power, establish a positive rate of climb, then retract flaps incrementally. In a Cessna 172, that typically means going from full flaps to 10 degrees first, confirming you have a positive climb, then bringing them up the rest of the way as performance allows, incrementally, not all at once. The examiner is watching the sequence. Power, pitch to climb attitude, carb heat off if applicable. Flaps in stages, trim as needed. In order, executed smoothly. Mistake number 3, not tracking the extended centerline. After a go-around, you're at low altitude, climbing, cleaning up the airplane, and probably running on some adrenaline. A lot of students start turning too soon. Either banking back toward the pattern before they have altitude to do it safely, or just drifting because they're not actively tracking the extended centerline of the runway. The standard procedure is to fly runway heading and climb to a safe altitude before you enter the traffic pattern. At a controlled airport, listen for tower instructions. They may issue a specific heading or turn. At an uncontrolled field, make your radio call and let other traffic know what you're doing. But don't add bank angle when you're still low and slow and still cleaning up the configuration. Mistake number 4, the low altitude ballooning problem. Here's a scenario that comes up. Student is on short final, maybe 30 to 40 feet above the runway. They're a little fast, a gust pushed the airspeed up in the last few seconds of the approach. They flare, the airplane floats, and now they're 15 feet above the midpoint of the runway with airspeed decaying, full flaps, and the far end of the runway visible in the windscreen. They decide, okay, going around. They add power, full throttle. And the airplane, in ground effect, already pitched nose high from the flare, full flaps, generating lift at this low airspeed, pitches up aggressively. Airspeed decreases further. They're climbing sort of at a high angle of attack with full flaps and not enough airspeed. This is a setup for an accelerated stall at the worst possible altitude. The fix is pitch discipline. When you add power in a go-around from that full flap, low altitude, nose high position, you're not trying to zoom climb. You're establishing a climb attitude. There's a real difference between pitching aggressively upward and pitching to the climb attitude that your pilot's operating handbook specifies. Pitch to the attitude, let the airspeed build to a safe number, then work the flaps incrementally. Control the pitch, let the airplane do its job. Mistake number 5, waiting too long to make the call. A go-around executed at 500 feet is almost always cleaner than one executed at 50 feet. At 500 feet, you have options: airspeed, altitude, time to execute the procedure cleanly. At 50 feet, everything is harder. The mechanics are more demanding. Your margin is almost nothing. And here's the thing, the psychological pull toward just land it is at its absolute strongest at 50 feet because the runway is right there. Your brain has been working toward this landing for several minutes. The plan continuation bias is doing its best work right now. This is the core purpose of stabilized approach criteria, not as a bureaucratic rule, but as a tool that moves your decision point up to where you still have room to work, where your options are good, where the go-around is easier to execute and easier to decide. One thing worth flagging for gusty conditions. If the winds are reported gusty, most instructors teach adding half the gust spread to your approach speed. A 10-knot gust factor means adding 5 knots to your approach speed, but gusty conditions also mean your stabilized approach standard needs to be stricter, not looser. A marginal approach at 500 feet may be seriously compromised at 200 feet after the next gust comes through. Give yourself more margin, not less, when the surface winds are variable. Here's a practical thing to take with you on your next flight. Before you fly your first approach, make a deal with yourself. Set a specific decision point, 500 feet, or wherever your instructor has established, and make it a personal rule. If the picture isn't right at that point, the go-around is automatic. No negotiating, no let's see how it develops, just the standard you set on the ground. Executed in the air. Do that consistently, and the go-around stops feeling like an admission of failure and starts feeling like the most confident, competent decision you can make. Because here's the bottom line. You can always go around. You can fly another approach. You can try again with a better setup. What you cannot do is unland. The AOPA Air Safety Institute has case studies on loss of control during the approach and landing phase that are genuinely worth your time. They pull from real accident data, and the patterns are instructive. The FAA's Airplane Flying Handbook Chapter 8 covers the go-around procedure in detail, and the Airman Certification Standards lay out exactly what your examiner expects to see. More at radiohangar.com. I'll see you in the pattern.